Everyone, welcome to another Tuesday weekly team huddle call with REI Vault with Chris Chico and Gary Boomershein. Welcome. Today's Tuesday, June 23rd, 2015, and welcome to the call. Glad to have you. It looks like it's going to probably be a smaller group today. An opportunity to ask questions. This is a Q&A opportunity. Ask whatever you'd like of Chris or myself, and potentially we can bring some other people in for dialogue. It can be technical in nature. If you want to ask questions about marketing or Podio or whatever you might want, or if it's deal related, that would be fine. And then whenever you're interested in asking a question, the way this works for those that are new, press *5 on your phone, and that will raise your hand, and then Chris and I can bring you into the call, and you can ask the question, and that'll be great. If again, press *5, and then when we don't have any people asking questions, then we typically end the call, and this usually goes up to about an hour. And if you have questions during the week that you don't have answered here, always email support@salesteamlive.com. That will create a ticket, and so our team can address it. We try to get to those quickly. We ask for 24 hours notice, but we're trying to get to them a lot faster, and we're monitoring that. If it's a deal question, you can always email dealhelp@reivault.com. And then lastly, if you ever have any suggestions or recommendations or feedback, stuff that you'd like to see, suggestions for REI Vault, just email suggestionbox@reivault.com. So with that, Chris, how are you?
Everything good. No complaints here in sunny South Florida. And just looking to get started. I don't have anything specific that I wanted to comment on today's call. So maybe we could just open it up and for questions, unless you had something specific you wanted to cover on the call.
I think that's good. So if you have a question, go ahead and press *5, and we'll bring you into the call. You can ask your question. And again, once the there's no more questions, then we typically end the call. So *5.
So we have area code. Area code 619. I just noticed the last four digits are 1234, which I thought was that's a pretty good last four digits. Let me see who this is. California.
No, it's actually Vegas.
Oh, who's this?
Jeff Baer.
Oh, hey, Jeff. How are you?
Good. I just had one quick question since I'm listening to the call and no one else had raised their hand. Do you guys, how do you do things in counties that are non-reporting? Does that make a difference at all to your system? Like, for example, in Alaska, there are places that I've lived and would be interested in investing in again that don't report almost any information to anybody. They're non-reporting cities, and I was wondering how you guys get information on how you might be able to work with that sort of a situation, or have you run into it before?
We have. You want me to address it? So we've done a lot of work in and been able to find a lot of data in Alaska, but it really is dependent upon different cities. It has to do with the county recorder and county assessor. If the best way to do this, Jeff, and there's disclosure states, and then there's a lot of non-disclosure states, and then there are other parts of the country that really have very, very strange data, and we've dealt with all of it. I think over the last 11 years, we've pulled over 30 or 40 million records. It actually might even be higher than that. But Alaska,
sure.
we pulled data. Louisiana also seems to be very funky. But if you want us to look specifically in Alaska, what I would do is I'd give us the counties or the cities or even preferably the specific zip code.
And okay, well, there's only one zip code or two.
Okay. Yeah, if you want, send an email to support@salesteamlive.com. And what you're trying to accomplish, if you want to just find, you know, what kind of data we have accessible. And typically, I would imagine you're looking for sellers and sellers that have equity. What we'll do is we'll go to our different data providers and see what we can provide and come back to you. And,
okay.
And in fact, if you hold on really quick, I've got something. I was just looking at this today over here. We're working on a new distress list. Chris and I are working on a whole bunch of new marketing lists and new. We call them campaigns. So it's a specific list of names and addresses, and then the marketing copy that we want to mail to it, and then the frequency. That's kind of the campaign. And so we've been working on a new, what I would call a distress with equity list that we're working on getting out to everybody. And I'll just tell you right now, there are five areas or five counties that look like we've got data. Anchorage,
Kenai. I'm specifically looking for the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, which I know is a non-reporting, non-disclosure borough.
Okay. Yeah, I don't see, especially for this distress list. If you want, send us the zip code, and then we'll reach out. We've got about 10 different data providers, some data providers that are larger, and then some niche ones that pull data from the courthouse and et cetera. But we'll see what we can do for you.
Okay. Good to know. That was my only question. Thanks.
All right, perfect. All right, if you have a question, go ahead and press *5.
Hello?
Is that Justin?
Hey, Justin.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey, I was just calling very specifically to find out if there's any update on the new list, or at least an update delivery date, or do we still not know yet?
No, actually, I've already pulled the list for you, Justin. There's about
ten
people in the group that I pulled the list. We're just finalizing it. And
okay.
I've got it. I know you're in San Diego, and so we've got it for you, and we're reviewing it, and I'll be reaching out to you personally over the next couple of days.
Awesome.
There's a couple of decision points. I want to show you kind of what Chris and I are planning on launching, and then I would imagine over 3 weeks we'll have it tested and then rolled out to the larger group. So.
Okay, great. That was it.
It is close. It is very close.
Okay, that was it.
Awesome. Hey, Chris. Chris said you turned on the marketing again, and the very first call was a deal. Did I hear right?
The very first call was a verbal where he's getting squirrely, but we'll see. It's not a slam dunk that I thought it was going to be when I spoke to him, but it's still definitely in the mix.
Okay. Awesome. Keep us posted. Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
Awesome.
Let me see. I got a cell phone in North Carolina, 1-869.
Hey, guys, this is Allie. How y'all doing?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing good, Chris. Hey, yeah, I'm calling on my cell phone here. I'm actually in Tennessee, though, here where I'm working.
Okay.
I got a couple questions for you. I'll try to not tune in, just one or two. I'll go through them quick, and then you got other guys on. But we've been at it here for about, 5 weeks. I think this is the 5th week. And this market we're in here, it's pretty hot right now. And the calls I'm getting, I'm hitting 4 zip codes. And getting a good response rate and everything. 2 of them, but I guess my question is, no one, of course, no one's going to call you up and you're going to get anything, 60 cent on the dollar or anything like that, I know. But I'm really, here the last couple of weeks, I've been really thinking, am I, in a market like this when it's this hot, there's been some, when I say hot, I mean, I'm calling in some, you know, duplexes and things that are Section 8 that are, you know, they're renting for $1,000 a month, and a couple blocks away there's been some, you know, some condominiums being built, and these people, you know, they think they've won the lottery, and, you know, they're wanting $250,000 for, you know, their stuff. And it's just kind of how the market has really taken off here in the last couple years. But my question is, you know, in a market like this, it's a lot different than when I was doing it a few years ago here. Am I going to maybe a little too much, hitting them too hard? I've sent out probably 4 or 5 pre-sale letters, I'm always justifying the offer. I mean, my numbers are good to me, you know, on the houses that would be rentals. The formulas are good. I'm explaining it and everything, so everything's justified. I'm not just throwing crazy numbers out. But my one question is, are you guys seeing in the markets that you're working, or other people from the calls that are in markets that are similar, where it's a seller's market, are you just going where the margins aren't as big, and you just kind of go with it? And Chris, I know you always say just tie it up and, you know, just lock it up and work with it from there. But I don't know if maybe I've been too aggressive on the, you know, my price when I'm going for. Like I said, it looks good to me. I'm trying to leave plenty of room for everybody, for the end buyer. But I guess I really got to thinking hard. I talked to a buyer over the weekend. He's bought about 5 properties this year. And he's basically telling me, you know, he's just looking for a 1%. You know, I'm looking at his house, and, you know, I'm looking at his deal. And to me, I'm like, well, I've got deals like that that I'm not really, you know, I'm like, is it kind of in my head? He's just looking for a 1% return, you know. And it doesn't seem like a deal, some of the stuff that looks like is going on. I guess my question is, you know, in a market like that, is the margin just not going to be that big? Because I haven't, you know, nobody that I've talked to is just absolute in dire straits where they have to sell, if you know what I mean, yet. Like I said, not, you know, we've just done one round of mail. But it's getting a good response and everything. But, you know, everyone's got that fever in the air about that it's, you know, everybody wants to list for retail. And I just,
yeah, what I would say is, I mean, my couple of thoughts that came to my mind is that in a hot market, there's definitely adjustments necessary. And, you know, you have to take you know, in the past where you had a seller that needed to sell you know, he has no really other options, the market is not doing that great, and so that's not the case now. And so you really have to, where you fill in the gap is making adjustments for that end buyer. And so, you know, when you say, what we found here in South Florida is that the buyer is changing. The buyers that we used to have, you know, 6 months ago are different than the buyers that are buying the deals today. And so, you know, what we find in the market is that some of the old crusty wholesalers and rehabbers, the rehabbers that, you know, want X amount of money if they do a rehab, you know, there's a lot of buyers out there that will take significantly less profit just simply because they want a deal. And so part of it is an adjustment of, like, you might be making offers thinking, well, that's a reasonable offer, somebody's going to buy it and close on it, or whether, you know, it might be a rental property or it might be a property where they're going to fix it up and flip it. But, you know, there might be you're making offers based on a particular discount where the market is willing to accept less of a discount because of the desire of people to buy properties. And so then now you're taking yourself out of position because another person could come in and offer the seller, you know, X amount more, and then they're still able to move the property to a host, to another buyer who, you know, who's out there in the marketplace looking for their first deal, and, you know, they're okay with not making that much money from it. So the way I look at it is maybe look at it in terms of relative value versus absolute value. So absolute would mean that you feel like, suppose you get 10 deals and it's 10 leads, and you're trying to figure out, okay, based on my percentages, this is not a deal, that's not a deal, and you're looking at each deal individually as a deal. The other way you can look at it is just take a look at all the leads and say, you know what, out of all these 10 leads that I have right now, or these 15 or 20 leads that I'm working with, which ones are the best deals? Not necessarily what I think is a deal, but out of all the ones, if I have 20 sellers here that I can potentially do something with, these 3 deals are the best deals. Maybe not good deals you know, for maybe in your eyes, but, you know, they're the best deals that you have in your hand, and now you're going to take those and try to take those to market and try, and then from there, then at that point, then you might be surprised to know that, wow, those sold. I didn't think they would sell because I didn't think they were good deals, but the market did, and so now it allows you to make that adjustment in your market for the new buyer that's out there buying these deals. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, well, that's a lot. I think that's kind of what's going on. You're right. I've got these figures in my head where I'm looking at it. I'm just like, nah, it's not a deal. But, you know, that does make sense. Maybe, like I said, it's just maybe the buyer's changed, like you said. Well, obviously it has. So maybe I'll take that into consideration. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Okay. Well, great. Well, and then the other kind of question I got that kind of ties into that, you know, I've talked to a lot of people. Like I said, I've sent out some offers and everything. Yeah, you helped me out the other week, Chris, with some support on one I did for those three duplexes. And well, they got back with me and just said it was, you know, I'll just tell you, you know, they're wanting $500,000, which I ran the numbers and everything, and we came in around 320 is what I sent them, you know, sent them three contracts for all three of them. And they kept it about a week, and they got back with me and said, well, it just, it's a little less what they want to do. They really weren't pressed to sell, and they'll keep me in mind and just, you know, just kind of left it in that and keep in touch, you know, they'll let me know. But what I was thinking with a deal like that, and even some of these other ones, I mean, you know, kind of along the lines of what you just said to me, where maybe my offers were really too low and I can make something work with a higher offer. Even some of these ones I've already sent out, these pre-sale packages to, I mean, I was thinking should, you know, get back up with them and call them back and try to work something out instead of, I guess, waiting for the follow-up for the mail to actually run its course, you know, have them on the follow-up campaign. I mean, since, you know, we just talked.
Yeah, I would definitely follow up with them and say, you know, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to figure out what you want to know, what is the leap that they would take. In other words, mm-hmm. you know, you in your mind you want to get to their bottom line number. What is their bottom line number? And then at that point, then you decide. And so I would get back to those people and say, hey, send you the offer, and they might say, no, it's crazy. I would never take that. I said, well, you know what? And I always like to use the approach of that you're not the investor. You're actually, you know, you're kind of working. You work for a company or you work for a group of investors, and so you kind of then position yourself on their side, and you say, you know, I mean, obviously that offer doesn't work for you. We've had a couple of deals that have fallen through over the last couple of weeks, and so we really need to use the funds. Let me ask you, I mean, this obviously didn't work. I know you said you were asking X. I know they can't do X. I mean, what's the best number that you can do on that on your property for you able to close quickly and so bring them down. Like, in other words, the pre-sale really is a way for you to continue the dialogue. You let them know that you're serious because you send them a contract. Most people have not sent them a contract or sent them anything other than just the postcard or letter they got. So they know you're serious. Mm-hmm. And then you're trying to inching them a little bit closer to where they should be. And you do that with all of them, and then you kind of come, you kind of use that same approach that I mentioned is, relatively speaking, who's the best deal? Who are you going to take a chance on? That you're going to go and take it to the market and try and see if you can move it, you know, to another buyer. And either A, you may move it, or B, you'll come back with a number, and at that point you'll come back to them and say, look, you said you wanted initially 100, we got down to 80. After all said and done, my funding sources looked at the deal and they've come back to me at X. However, you know, and that you do that once you find a buyer, because if the buyer wants a lower price, then you can go back to the seller and renegotiate. But I would just, you know, I would go at it under that approach. What is, you know, I know this isn't work for you. That's fine. Tell me what will. What's the least that you know, what's the best number you can give me? Let me go back to them. Let me see what I can work out. I don't know if I can or can't. And then you kind of get, you know, figure out who do you have on the table for you that gives you the best chance. And so you're going to take a chance on X number of deals. And, you know, it's a numbers game. You might put three or four deals in the contract. Not all will sell, but you have a few that sell, yeah, and the ones that don't, now you have more information and more info on the market and how it's performing, so you can make adjustments on your previous offers. And sometimes what I find is that you have a couple of deals that sell, and you're amazed at how much they sold for because you think it's a crazy price, but the market is nutty. And then you'll go back to your old lease and say, I spoke with this other lady, and she had a similar deal, and I said no to her, but now that this guy bought this deal, I think that's a deal. And so you go back to some of those old leads, too, as well.
Okay. Well, all right.
How many of these deals need work? Are they pretty houses or are they ugly houses that need work?
No, they're for the most part, they're already 70% good looking houses. They're okay. They're all good rentals, all of them. Yeah, everything is good. Some of them, there's a couple of, you know, getting a lot of duplexes. Some of that, they're a little rougher, and there's no war zones. But they're just, like I said, there's some redevelopment going on here in some of these areas where I'm at, and just not very far away. You know, they're going in and they'll buy the property and they're bulldozing it. You know, and they're putting up a, you know, brand new house or a condominium. So that's a lot of, I guess you'd say, like your bread and butter deals that you would, you know, 5 years ago, it'd been a slam dunk. They're kind of sitting on the fence, you know, about it. And just to me, it just doesn't, as a landlord that would come in to buy it, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, the numbers, it wouldn't just, you know, but there again, I mean, like Chris was saying, I mean, maybe it's just a little different. I could see where somebody, if they did want to go in and bulldoze it and do that, you know, obviously they got the money to do that, but strictly as a landlord or something, I don't,
yeah.
You know, it doesn't.
Yeah, but the uglier the house, the more motivation typically. So that's, yeah. If it's a pretty house, sometimes there's going to be less motivation. I would agree with Chris. Half the battle is getting the property under contract. And we got a couple of people in our group. One specifically, they do between 60 and 90 houses a month in the Ohio area. And 100%, what we've heard from them, 100% of the deals they go back and renegotiate. So they'll get it under contract pretty much whatever the price is that the seller wants. So, like, if you're in a hot market like where you're at in Tennessee and you're losing mm-hmm. all of these deals on price, I would seriously consider, you know, finding out what, if they're at 500, like on the duplex, they wanted 500, you offered them 320, there was some back and forth, and they finally said no, go back and find out what number would work. What's the least that they would take and try to get it under contract and work with them, build some rapport. Once somebody goes in contract, they're already starting to spend the money. They're already thinking about it. They really don't want you to back out. So I'd work to get these things under contract, even if it's a higher price, and then renegotiate. You know, use this opportunity. Get your buyers in there. You know, you're going to build some rapport with your buyers. You're going to find out exactly where they need to be. And then, you know, worst case scenario, you got to pull the plug and do that. That would be one. The second thing, you know, everyone's offering all cash. If you have the ability and the knowledge on also coming in with the second offer where the seller can actually carry, right? So you come up with some cash now and have them finance over a period of time. If you knew how to do that, that would allow you to create multiple offers, right? Some of these sellers, they want the cash flow, not necessarily mm-hmm. just the cash. They just don't want to be landlords anymore. And so that would work. A lot of people, we got a lot of people in our group that do that. You know, you come in with a $100,000 all cash offer, and when they they turn you down, you might be able to come up with $120,000 or $125,000, where they get some cash now and then some cash over a period of time, and then you can flip those properties.
Well,
or
yeah, and well, it does. I'm glad you said that because that was my last question that I had for you, and actually this morning. Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you guys. Whenever I had a call this morning, somebody's got two houses and they're wanting to do deferred. And the duplex deal I was just telling you about, I mean, that's they're wanting to do a 1031, you know, with that. So I am running into a lot where, you know, of course, you know, get a lot of this inherited property or they're in the trust, so they're worried about the capital gains. And I thought about that, and then that's what I was going to ask is, when do you guys actually do that? I was on the call this morning. I put an offer in. It's a couple that has two houses. Same thing. They're inherited, and they have another house in mind that they want to move to, and, you know, they're going to, you know, they want to do the you know, the deferred, where, you know, they got to have 30 days to go into it so they don't have to pay the taxes. So we're out there with them, and I threw my offer out of, you know, 75 for both of them, which is, you know, again, I justified it. They, you know, it was, we're in the ballpark, and like I said, they said they're going to consider it, and also brought up, you know, if the taxes are really what you're worried about, you know, I'd also be open to doing, you know, if you guys were interested in some owner financing too. You know, that's just, you know, I'm putting that all on the table to try to make something work for y'all and, you know, get you guys moved out and moving on. And, you know, they sat there and considered that. We're, you know, we're going to get back towards the end of the week. They're actually just going to think about the offer, and then I put the owner financing out for them too. So that was my next question, is when you guys actually kind of, I'm primarily trying to wholesale right now, you know, of course, just to, you know, cash flow and just to get moving and get some momentum. But when you see we might be, you know, if you might not can pull it off like that, I mean, how quick are you guys going in and doing that, actually throwing that out on the table, you know, everything that you can do, if you know what I mean, instead of letting them just kind of marinate on the price to come back for that, or you guys just, you know, how soon do y'all go back and, you know, just pull everything out? Just because I don't want to lose the deal. I don't want to go to a realtor. They're already talking to a realtor. You know what I mean? So I don't, you know, I want to keep the deal.
The seller financing is a little bit of an art and a science. The seller financing is typically, it's all about the words that you use. If you just say, hey, would you be willing to do seller financing? Or they don't get that. But if you had a discussion, which is, if I could come up with a price that's closer to what you want, or in the price that you wanted, but you'd be a little bit more flexible on how I pay you over time, would that possibly work? You'd say, what if I could get you the 120, you want 125,000? I can give you all cash and I can close in a week or 14 days or a month for 100 grand. But if I could give you the 125,000, would you be a little flexible on how I get you the money, let's say over a period of time? Then the next thing you have to ask, and you could sometimes I would ask this, you know, up front, which is how much money are they getting in rent? And some people will say they're not renting it. Some people will say they're getting $1,000 a month. And if you have the ability, you also ask them, do they have specific plans for what they're going to do with the money? Because sometimes they'll say, well, I'm going to go buy this other house. And, you know, they may only need $20,000, or they want to move their daughter, or they help their daughter, you know, for education. So they may say, I need $20,000 right now. And you could come up and you could say, well, what if I got you the $20,000 right now? And instead of giving you $1,000 a month, what if I were able to get you, say, closer to $600 a month for a period of time? But I could get you the price that you wanted, right? Now it's a totally different discussion. You're really working. You're trying to hit what their needs are, right? They have, they're looking for some cash now. They're looking for, you know, some cash flow. And you say, you know, then you could throw in the other benefit. If it's a tax issue, you could say the good news is that, you know, you would not be, instead of paying taxes on this big lump, you know, check, you know, you get $100,000 instead of paying $20,000 or $25,000 to the IRS, you know, you would only have to be paying what you receive on an annual basis. So let's say I'm paying you $5,000 or $6,000, $7,000 a year. You're only going to have to pay, and frankly, they're not even going to have to pay taxes on that, right? Because it's what's called by the IRS, they call it an incomplete sale. So they, you know, that, and there's a, I don't want to go crazy on this, but they also have a basis, right? They bought the house, let's say that their basis on the house is $40,000. If you came in and say you bought it for $120,000, right, the first $40,000 that they get is tax free, and then the rest of it is only taxable at the capital gains rate based on what they receive in that year. So there's a lot of benefits, and then they can pass that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's great. I didn't realize that. So whatever is assessed at that first part, is that what you're saying? That's not taxable.
Not the assessed, it's the basis. It's their basis.
Okay.
The basis of the house is typically what they paid for it, right?
Okay, oh, I got you, yeah.
It's what they paid for. You don't. You typically don't go into these types of details. Sometimes at the very end, you know, they may have these types of questions before they actually sign the paperwork, but you don't get into that type of dialogue. Really, again, it's on the front end, right? You find out, Like these guys that want a bit, let's say they want $500,000 for the house and you've offered them $320,000. You know, one of the things I would say is, well, gosh, what are you going to do with the $500,000? If you got $500,000, let's just assume for the sake, for the minute, if you got the $500,000, what are you planning on doing with it? And they're going to say, well, we're just going to take the check and put it into the bank, or we're going to buy stocks. And we're going to say, well, are you going to pay the, I assume if you got $500,000, you're going to have a massive capital gain. You're going to probably pay, what, $150,000 to $200,000 in taxes. What if I could give you $320,000 in cash today, or what if I could get you closer to the $500,000 and you just got some money now and some money over, you know, a period of time, and then you'd reduce your taxes. So not only do you get a lot more money, you know, maybe even $70,000 or $80,000 or $100,000 more, but I could pay you, you know, so you'd have fixed income and cash flow for the long haul that would also be, you know, tax deferred or tax free. At least it creates the dialogue, right? And now you're still in the ballpark. And by the way, some of these conversations, at the very end, you get them into contract, you built rapport with them, and they still take the cash, right? You're working with them a couple of weeks. They like the idea. They're still talking because they're now building a relationship with you. You know, they've got a vested interest. They're trying to think about, they're really starting to be excited about selling the house. And then they're like, well, you know what? At the end of the day, we'll just take your cash offer. But you would have never had that ability at the beginning. I'm going to give you an example, even me personally. I had an apartment building that I sold last year in California. And I wasn't going to take less than $960,000, all right? I bought this thing for $540,000, but I wasn't going to sell it for a penny less than $960,000. And so I ended up getting into contract. They nickeled and dimed. They got me into contract at $940,000. And then 6-8 weeks later, there were some problems, and they backed out. And so there was this back and forth, and finally I sold it to them for $880,000. So I would have never accepted $880,000 at the beginning, but it was after I got into contract and we went down all the paths and I'm helping, you know, giving them documentation, right? And I'm ready to move my money. I already had a place that I was going to take the money. And then they came back and pulled the plug on me. And it's like, okay, I wanted to close the deal, right? But I would have never accepted that. Yeah. So it's the same thing for you. I would go in at a higher price. You know, get them into contract, you know, work with them, build some rapport, and then worst case scenario, you got to renegotiate with them.
Okay.
I think you'll have a lot more success doing that.
All right. Well, that's what I'm going to do. Yeah, that sounds good. That's it. That's a lot of help, man. That's a couple of things that have been on my mind the last little bit. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Awesome, Howie.
Hold on. I can't seem to. Oh. Justin.
Hey, I didn't realize you guys would get back around so quickly to me. I'm actually literally about to sit down and eat my nice warm lunch. Is there anybody else you want to go to and then come back to me?
No.
Mine's not urgent. It can wait till next week.
Okay. I'll put you back on mute. All right, so, Gary, I forgot. What do we press for to raise hand? I don't have it in front of me. Star 5 to raise your hand. Star 5 to raise your hand. And if you don't have any questions, then obviously the call will end. And again, as always, in between calls, we're always available either through support at reivault.com. Support at reivault.com. Any questions, comments, or anything you need help with, Claudio, your campaign, your mailing, anything. And if you need help on a deal, want us to look at something for you, that would be dealhelp@reivault.com, dealhelp@reivault.com. So we don't have any other questions, Gary? Any topic or any last words that on your mind?
No. Have a great week, and we'll look forward to speaking with you guys next week.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for attending the call.